Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick VinZant. Coming up in this episode, pickleball and difficult foods.
Pickleball is very much strategic. Choosing what to hit the correct shot at the right time is almost entirely what the sport's about. Is it hard to be number one? I think it's a little bit hard in that you're always being pursued. Like, you don't really have upwards to go. As a participation sport, as the number of people that play it, it has a scary amount of potential. So imagine it bounces in there and you're at the other kitchen line. So I'm making contact with the ball 10 feet away from you and I'm hitting it 50 miles an hour at you. I mean, in baseball, that's equivalent to a 300 mile per hour fastball.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, subscribe, leave us a rating or review. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. So when we first started talking about this, I thought it was going to be a pipe dream. That, like, oh, yeah, we might do it. But no, it looks like we're actually going to be able to set up an interactive voicemail system that will let you guys, the listeners, be a much bigger part of the show, and we'll probably be doing that. Fingers crossed. No, we're going to do it by the end of this month, meaning July. So our first guest is the best player at a sport that is just skyrocketing in popularity. And when I say the best, he has been ranked number one in the world in singles, doubles, mixed doubles, you name it. He's pretty much the best in the world and the best ever at it right now. This is professional pickleball player Ben Johns. So have I not been paying attention, or did pickleball suddenly become really popular?
yeah, that's exactly how it went. I'd say back in 2019, 2018, it started to see definitely a lot of growth, but people still hadn't really heard of it. And then suddenly between 2020 and 2021, it kind of became the cool thing to do. It's just kind of a sport for everybody. So yeah, it really has taken over a lot of people.
So, I mean, when I have thought of it before, and this is probably just because I have relatives who live there, but like, I thought of it as like, all right, this is the 60, 70-year-old retirees in Arizona who are doing this. But is it everybody really? Like, is it younger people, or is it just kind of getting more popular amongst a certain crowd?
It caught on with the older people first because it has something very attractive, and that's that it's very easy to begin to play, even if, you know, your mobility is limited or whatever. So old people kind of gravitated to it in that sense. It's also pretty social, which they seem to like it at that age. But then people kind of start to realize, hey, this isn't just sport for old people. It's actually just a ball for anybody to play. And the same things apply to the old people. It's like, you don't need to be athletic to play, even though you can also be super athletic and have a really good time with it. As far as who plays it now, in some cities, I see it as kind of one of the cool hipster things to do, almost like, oh, you don't play pickleball yet? What are you doing? Definitely kind of a young meetup thing, just for fun.
Is this going to be, you know, the trend sport for a little while, or do you think that this is going to continue to keep going?
You know, yeah, that's a good question. You know, I feel like a lot of people that play it, because of how they're addicted to it or how enthusiastic they are about it, they're very bullish on it. They're optimistic. And from my point of view, I'd say, you never really can tell with anything like this. Like, there's just too many factors that go into it. You can't predict stuff. But what I will say is I've been around a lot of sports for a while, since I was a kid. And I've never really seen a sport like pickleball as far as how people really get addicted to it. One, like, they just don't want to stop playing. And also just that it covers such a wide demographic of people. So I think it has that going for it. And if other things fall into place correctly, then it could continue to do very well.
So did you get in before the craze, or did you get swept up in it?
Yeah, so I started really at its beginning of growth, in my opinion, and that was early 2016. And that was kind of marked by some first initial big professional tournaments. So the very first US Open for pickleball was held in early 2016, and that was my first tournament. So I got into the competitive scene right when it was growing, and I'd say it got bigger with the public, like where everyone is more aware of it, more in like 2020, basically.
From what I, my you know, 3 second Google search, you're basically the best player ever. Number one in singles, doubles, right? Against pets, like every single type of pickleball competition, you're number one.
Yeah. So how we distinguish it is we play doubles, singles, and mixed doubles. So just playing girl-guy doubles, basically. So there's three divisions. And yeah, I've been top ranked in all three of them for about 3 years now. Which is kind of the longest it's been. But I mean, what I will say is it's very hard to say like best ever when, you know, the sport itself as a professional sport is so young. So in a very short span, I may be the best, but that would be surprising to maintain that for a very long time to the future.
That's what I was wondering about it. Like the pros who are in it, the pros who are like yourself, like the people who are really good, whenever you have a young sport, Are they still going to be really good 10 years from now? Right. Like I think of like George Mikan, who was a fantastic basketball player, but would he be in the NBA now? You know what I mean? So do you think that like, are the pros now, where is the sport in sense like, ooh, they'd still be good later? Or is it such in its infancy that like, man, if you're just pretty good, you're going to be a pro?
Great question. Yeah, it's definitely very unpredictable. How I think of it now is there was kind of not really a turning point, but an inflection point in pickleball where it started to rise very rapidly in terms of level. And I'd say 5 years ago compared to now is going to be more dramatic than 5 years into the future. It doesn't grow, you know, linearly or anything close. It's more it grows in jumps. But do I think the players will still be drastically different in 5 to 10 years? Absolutely. And do I think players that are good now can adapt to those times? Yes. But just like any sport, I think the further on you get, the better the players get. That's just the natural course of sports. People figure them out. They get better. They get more athletic, all those things. And I'd say right now, pickleball is the best players are generally the ones that are adapting the most quickly.
Why are you good at it? Like, is there something physical and that like you are the perfect size for a pickleball player, you've got the fastest, like what about you makes you good at it?
Yeah, so right now pretty much all the really good professional players are former tennis players. They're former D1 tennis players. We have former professional tennis players. Like they were very good tennis players, and that's the background that helps a lot. I had not that high of a tennis background, but considerably high. Along with a considerably high table tennis background, and that's another good background sport for it. So the blend of the two definitely helped in terms of just a lot of the skills, and not many people have that blend of a high level of those two sports where most are operating on one. So two definitely helps me a lot. And then the other thing is kind of before what I said, it's about experimentation. To be at the top, you need to keep getting better because everybody is. So you're really kind of experimenting and figuring out new things and learning from other really good players at the same time as maintaining what you do have.
Do you get bored being number one? Is it harder to be like, is it harder to become, is it harder to get to being number one, or is it harder to stay number one?
Another good question. Yeah, it's a little bit of both. You know, a lot of people say, or at least something I like to say, is pressure is a privilege, and it's definitely a privilege to be where I am. I definitely enjoy it a lot, and it's fun to strive and still try to get better and all that. Is it hard to be number one? I think it's a little bit hard in that you're always being pursued. Like you don't really have upwards to go. That's also a little bit of mindset. You know, there are certainly still goals you can pursue, and there's certainly still a lot of improvement to be made as a player. So it's not really necessarily lack of motivation, but it can be a difficult spot to be in at times because there's a lot expected of you at all times.
You're getting everybody's best day all the time.
Yeah, I have a target. I have a target on my back.
Is like, how is it different from other racket sports, right? And I could think of like tennis, badminton, ping pong, racquetball. Like, how is it different from those?
Pretty much everyone that plays thinks it's a blend of some of those. And it is. It's totally a blend of racket sports. So, for instance, like size, it's the same size court as a badminton court, but the net is lower than badminton. And obviously you're using different equipment. A wiffle ball is the ball that we use. So it bounces a lot lower than a tennis ball. You can't impart as much spin on it. The paddle is, it doesn't have strings. So the paddle is more like a table tennis paddle than it is a tennis racket. And it's in between the lengths of the two. So it's a blend of that right there. And those three are the biggest blend, I think. Any of the other racket sports, I generally know, like squash, racquetball, paddle, all those, they have walls that you play off of, and we don't have that in pickleball. So I'd say it's most similar to badminton, table tennis, and tennis.
What's the best part of the game to be good at? Like serving, returning? If somebody was going to be good at this aspect, like, ooh, the guy who's good at this is going to be really good.
So it's actually, it's a cool sport in that, in contrast to something like tennis at a very high level, at least, the serve doesn't matter. We serve below our waist underhand, basically. So it's not a very big impact. Like tennis is, you know, it's a huge impact with your serve. It's also difficult for players that are just learning the game. So it's kind of a detriment to the sport, in my opinion. So pickleball doesn't have that. As far as your question goes, pickleball is very much strategic, which is another reason people like it a lot. It doesn't really matter how good of an athlete you are. Like, it definitely helps. Don't get me wrong. Like, coordination, eye-hand coordination, you have to have some of that, obviously. But the point is, somebody that is a worse athlete than you can easily beat you by doing the right things strategically. And that comes back to shot selection. Just choosing what to hit the correct shot at the right time is almost entirely what the sport's about. Plus a little bit of conversion, of course. And people find that frustrating, you know, like tennis players that are very good will lose to people that play pickleball, even though they look like complete non-athletes. And it's frustrating. And you want to keep playing in order to get better because you don't understand why you're not good. So you can put up, you know, an NBA or NFL athlete and they feel like they should be good on the court. And they're just not yet, at least. So that's why I think they like playing it a lot. And that's why it's very interesting. That's also why it's a big sport among other professional athletes. There's a lot of NFL, NBA players that play that I know, and quite a few other random people.
So it's an athletic sport that you don't actually have to be athletic to play.
Exactly. You can be as athletic as you want. There's some moves you can make in it that are very athletic, but you don't have to be in order to be good.
So then is it strategy? Are you beating somebody with the strategy? Like, I'm going to go left corner, work in left corner, and then go right corner? Or is it like placement? Like, you got to be able to hit the ball right to this location.
It's both.
It's both?
It's definitely both. Yeah, absolutely. If you choose the right shot, you're going to find your placement is naturally a lot better because you chose the right shot. So it's kind of, they go hand in hand for sure. And there's some people that can, you know, get over those obstacles with pure athleticism. And it's just that disparity between the two, how much one affects the other. It's a lot less high in pickleball than it is in most other sports. For instance, you can out-athlete somebody in basketball a lot easier than you can out-athlete somebody in pickleball.
That makes sense, right? Because I played like sports against my dad when I was a teenager, and like basketball, well, I just had to jump. But in racquetball, right, like he would just work me by like, I'm going to put it in this corner and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. Like, financially, is pickleball at the place right now where like you can be a pro pickleball player and just be a pro pickleball player?
Yeah, so that's been definitely a very recent thing. In the past 2 to 3 years, it's become a lot more viable to do that. So myself, along with, I'd say, I don't know, 10 other guys, 10 other girls, are at the top enough to make, you know, a decent wage to very decent with nothing but playing pickleball. So yeah, I mean, that's what I do and that's what some other people do, but it's obviously not as big of a player pool as say tennis, where you have the top 200 players doing just fine.
And we talking five figures, six, people hitting sevens?
Yeah, so that would be like massively based on where you're ranked, and it's really just a handful of players that are getting paid well. Your mid to very top players can be making six, and the top of the top can be making seven.
Now, and is it a sport you can play for a long time, right? Could like somebody be like, old man Ben John's coming in, he's 55 and still working people.
Yes and no. So right now, the best older player, what we consider older, is the number two player in doubles, and he's 44, which is, he's an extreme outlier. There's not really almost anybody else like him. Almost all the other pros are below 35. But he's very good, especially for his age. So right now you can see that a little bit, and the more players that come in, the less we're seeing it. So I'd say within probably 5 years, you're not really going to see anybody really competing at a high level over 35, unless they're just absolute freaks. Like you have Djokovic and Nadal and Federer and tennis.
If you're going to be athletic in the sport, is it better to be like strength, power?
Your top two are agility, just moving quickly and covering a lot of court in a very quick way, and quick hands. So hand speed helps a lot. And that's not really something you train so much as you have. Fast pitch just doesn't really increase that much via training.
Now, are you big for a pickleball player? Wikipedia said 6'1". Is that, that's about the size you want to be? Or are the best people smaller or bigger?
Because we don't have a huge sample size of players, you know, there's a lot of other skills that go into it. So you can't really say this is the best height. And I mean, you can't even say that in tennis yet, but it definitely ranges from, I'd say the majority are between 5'9 and 6'4. To me, I'd say height helps. So I think you kind of want to be optimally anywhere between 6 and 6'4.
We'll go into this a little bit earlier than we usually do. Are you ready for some harder/listener-submitted questions?
Sure. Let's go for it.
Would pickleball be a cooler sport if it wasn't called pickleball?
I think it would be a lot easier to convince people to play the sport if it wasn't such a silly name. But the reality is there's too much based around it now to ever change that now. So it's stuck with that name. But yes, it would be, I wouldn't say necessarily cooler, but it would be a lot easier to get people on board more quickly.
Is it better to have a really good forehand or a really good backhand?
Yeah, it definitely varies player to player, but you can do more with your forehand generally. It just generates more power. It's got more reach. So if you can take one or the other, I'll take a good forehand.
Everybody's probably got a good forehand, but are there a lot of people who really have a good backhand?
I would say, yeah, you're right in that there's more players with a good forehand than a good backhand, but it's not that disparate, like as disparate as you'd think. There's definitely some very good backhands out there. Yeah, it largely depends on the player just because how the paddle mechanics work. There's not a huge disparity between one and the other.
Now, do you put spin on it or you're hitting it back?
Yeah, so there's definitely all kinds of spins, side spin, top spin, back spin, slice, rolls. There's spin at all times. It doesn't look like table tennis because there's a limit to the friction you can have on a pickleball paddle. So like table tennis, they use advanced rubbers to grip the ball like severely. That's why the ball bends like it does. We have a limit on the basically the grit on the paddle, so it doesn't grip the ball nearly as much as tennis strings or a table tennis paddle. So there's a lot less of a spin influence, but it's still very important.
Does it have a ceiling, though, in your opinion, right? Like, I understand that, yes, pickleball can get bigger. Clearly. Clearly people enjoy it. But can it be, yeah, right, like, is the goal of pickleball, like, we're going to take over and push hockey out the way? Or do you think that it's always going to be maybe, like, the biggest of the secondary kind of sports?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, it depends on, you know, how you tier sports, you know, how big can something get. I'd say personally, this is just my opinion and it could be completely wrong, cause nobody can really anticipate how this sport's going to continue to grow. But I would say it is not going to be a spectator sport like your NFLs, your NBAs, MLBs, those are your tier ones. It's not even going to be a spectator sport like your tier twos, like hockey or whatever. It's good for spectating, but it's not amazing. It's not as big of a court as tennis. You can't have a stadium as big and make it look as good. So I think there's a bit of an issue mechanically with the sport there. However, I'd say as a participation sport, as the number of people that play it, it has a scary amount of potential. Like it's as playable as any sport.
No, that makes sense, right? Like just because of the logistics of it, you can't fill an arena of people watching a pickleball. But if you sell it to TV, well, what does it matter? Like TV is kind of where most of the money is made anyway.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it can still do well, Yeah, it can still do well like tennis does. It would be a smaller court, so probably a little bit of a smaller stadium. So that's where I'd see it peaking, right? Like, say, a little bit below tennis in terms of viewership. But in terms of participation, I would expect it to exceed tennis at some point.
How does your older brother feel about you being better than him?
So my brother, 6 years older than me, he played professional tennis, and we played every sport together basically growing up. And he was always better because he was older. But I got into pickleball before him, 2 years before him. And once he was done with professional tennis, I got him to play pickleball. And basically from the start, once he decided, hey, I actually want to be really good at this and play this sport, we basically trained him and crafted him into a player that would be my doubles partner. So we always had the goal of playing doubles together as soon as he decided to get good. So no, he doesn't mind me being better than him because he's got the best partner he could ask for, I guess.
But you know how brothers are, man. Like, I got brothers and sisters. There's a little bit like, I'm happy for Ben. I'm going to beat Ben.
Yeah, no, that's definitely happened. He's played me many times before, and luckily he's mostly on the same side of the net these days, but he has never beaten me, and I'm sure he would like to.
Favorite place to play?
I'll give you a variety of answers here. So I'd say my favorite place, location, venue, tournament wise is, San Clemente, California. The PPA Tour runs a tournament there. That's just gorgeous location, really well run. The crowd's amazing. So that's like my favorite tournament to play, especially location's great. So for the business I mentioned where we take people on trips, we played in Ecuador, and that probably had the best view I've ever seen while playing. It was just silly. And let's see, anything else? I played in Hawaii, and that was pretty very nice too as far as general location. It wasn't the view, it was just like the whole environment. So those are my three.
Who's kind of in your rear view? Like, who's the player who's coming up and like, ooh, I got to watch this person because they could take the title.
Yeah, I wouldn't say there's a defined one person, especially because we have multiple divisions. So there's different people that are good at different things, mixed doubles, doubles, singles. So I don't really have a specific person in mind. And honestly, I'd be more wary of the people I'm not yet aware of than anybody specific now, because we get new players all the time that are super talented and want to play. And there's only more of them coming, right? So, I have a vision in my mind of what the ultimate athlete for pickleball would be. And that's the guy I'm wary of, not who we currently have.
I think this question is like from a 12-year-old, I think. Does it hurt when you get hit with the pickleball?
That's a legitimate question. That's very legitimate. It stings. That's about it. There's a strategy in doubles sometimes where we actually do try to hit each other in the body, because you're so close to each other that it works out that way. And that's not against etiquette. That's just part of the game, as long as you are aiming for the face. So yeah, it'll sting a little bit on the body, might leave a little bit of a mark for a day. You won't want to be getting hit in the face though. Yeah.
How fast is, like, has anybody ever like clocked it? Like, how fast are you guys hitting the ball?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, usually ground strokes would be going maximum probably 50, and overhead is more in the 70 to 80 range.
With a wiffle ball?
Yeah, with a wiffle ball. It pops off quick. They make some powerful stuff. So yeah, I know I've been clocked on overheads, but at like 70, and I'm sure some people can hit it harder than I can. And yeah, the biggest thing is not so much the speed as how close you are. When you're kitchen to kitchen, the kitchen is the non-balling zone. You're 14 feet away from each other, minus however long your wingspan is. So that ball could be on you in a hurry.
Oh, there's an area like, is the kitchen, it's right next to the net. You can't volley in that area.
Yes, exactly. So there's the net, and on each side, there's a 7-foot area where you can't hit the ball out of the air while you're in there. So imagine it bounces in there and you're at the other kitchen line. So I'm making contact with the ball 10 feet away from you, and I'm hitting it 50 miles an hour at you. I mean, in baseball, that's equivalent to a 300-mile-per-hour fastball.
That's damn. Is that the kind of reflexes where, like, you're not even thinking? It's just straight-up reaction.
Yeah, it's mostly reactions, but that is an extreme case. Like, most people are not trying to tag you in the body from that close anyway. And if I did and if I hit it right. And if you didn't move before you saw me, like as soon as you saw me start the swing, like if you tried to move as soon as I hit the ball, you have no prayer of getting out of the way. It won't happen. You're going to sit there and take it. But more normally, it's traveling slower than that when you're hitting volleys and you're able to react, but it's reactions. You're not really thinking that much.
Does being a professional pickleball player help you? And I think you know what they're talking about.
I do know what you're saying. That's a great question. I actually thought you were going to ask that one before you said it. As soon as I saw your face, I was like, I know what one he's going to ask.
Here it comes.
So I was actually in school, University of Maryland, the past 5 years. I graduated in May. And a lot of people would ask me, like, did you use this? Is this like a pickup line at college, at school? And it's not. All right. I've never even tried to use it. I don't know how it would work because I would just never bring that up. Just like, excuse me, miss. I don't know if you know this. I play pickleball, the sport you've never heard of, and I'm really good. I've never brought that up. So does it help? I mean, maybe. I'm sure it helps some people if you spin it the right way. I just have not tried.
What's the best pickleball trash talk? You're going to trash talk somebody. What are you coming with?
I'm known to be pretty silent on court, so I can't tell you that I have that much. There are the guys that do. My personal favorite is more like rejection. So say they try to attack you and you just hit a stiff counter where it's a clean winner off of their attack. Like it's a rebuttal. Like you can't do that. You might get a finger wag, like a Mutombo, and just like, no, can't do that. Not over here.
Right. Just the total shutdown.
My favorite guy that talks trash. One of his best lines is just something like, you can't do that. Just if you attack him and he hits a winner, and then he's just like, can't do that. No.
Oh, that's crushing, right? There's nothing better than like giving somebody your best shot and then you just nothing happens. You're just like, oh.
That's the thing right there, right? It's not about hitting the winner. It's about rejecting their winner and just turning them down. Just like, no, not over here.
You know, obviously, is there a huge difference in the paddles? Like, what are you looking for in a paddle?
Yeah, so I mean, originally the sport started out with wooden paddles, so it got a lot more advanced from there, let's say. These paddles reach prices up to like tennis rackets now, so they're like in the 200s, sometimes at the very advanced pro level. So my sponsor's here, Yola. They're a former table tennis company, and they got into pickleball recently because they saw the growth. So yeah, they make some pretty advanced stuff, and obviously I endorse them, so they're the best guys. But there's lots of paddles out there. There's lots of technology for spin, power, other stuff, different dimensions. It's all kind of up to you with what you want to play with based on the player you are.
You use a Yola paddle. Like, what is it? What are you looking for when you get one, right? Like, ooh, I want one that's like, what do you look for?
Yeah, so I actually designed it with them. They didn't just give it to me. Like, I actually designed it with them. So it's a carbon fiber surface, which carbon fiber is the best surface material we use because it grips the ball well, which you can impart spin with. And it's very stiff, not so stiff that you lose a lot of power. It's still got good power, but stiff enough to where when you miss hit it, like not in the sweet spot, not in the center, it's not a super bad miss hit. So it's forgiving, basically. So it's forgiving, it's got good pop, and it's got good spin. That's the basic three things that you really want.
So, you know, we were talking kind of before we started recording, but you, now this business, is pickleball really, it's that big that you can run a tour company? Like, how does this work with, because I found that amazing that like.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things, like within pickleball, it's such a, it was just an interesting hole in the market for us. So me and a friend of mine started a business a couple of years back called Pickleball Getaways. And we basically just take people on all-inclusive vacations, either to resorts or touring around the country with pickleball. So it turns out that because people get addicted to pickleball, they want to go on vacations, but they don't want to stop playing pickleball while they're doing it. So as I'm doing this interview, I'm actually in Croatia for a tour. I just finished one in Portugal. That's what I'm doing with my summer. So we got 32 clients in each one, Portugal here, previous week, 10 days. 10 days here in Croatia with a new 32, and I'm going back to Portugal for another 32 because we filled the first one so easily. Basically, it's just we play pickleball in the morning with some instruction, and then we tour the country in the afternoon to evening. And some different hotels slash resorts. So it's kind of an upper scale, all-inclusive vacation with pickleball.
Is there a country that's like, ooh, man, they love them some pickleball?
Yeah, that's funny because a lot of people actually ask. The only part you didn't really touch on is the international aspect. Like, is pickleball big elsewhere? And the answer is actually no, not at all. The U.S. is by far the biggest in pickleball. And, like, they're fanatical about it, but they've never even heard of it in other places in the world. Like, where we are, there's no pickleball players. There's no pickleball courts. So we have to use, like, temporary nets and temporary lines and stuff like that. And that's why, like, nobody else is doing it. Like, it's hard to do. You need the right surface. You need to bring equipment to set up the courts. So that's kind of why we're one of the only ones.
Are people in other countries, though, looking at it like, what are those guys doing?
Oh, like, yeah. They're just, they walk by, and just a couple of days ago, I was laughing because in the space of like an hour, I bet like five people walked by and were just with their cameras like, what are they doing? Like, these are just, I mean, are they dumb Americans? Is this a made-up game? Should I know about this? They were obviously just absolutely confused by what was going on.
That's pretty much all the questions I got, man. What's kind of coming up next for you? How can people kind of keep in touch with you?
Yeah, so I got a packed schedule, usually about 20 tournaments a year. I got this vacation business. I got various other things, but I pretty much go almost entirely through Instagram. So BenJohns_PB, that's how people stay in touch. And I kind of update my tournaments there and whatever else I'm up to. So it can really be anything at any given time of the year.
Cool. When is pickleball season? Like, when's the tournaments and all that stuff? I would think it was in the summer.
Yeah, pickleball season is kind of year round. We don't, like, we have a pro tour and they haven't really figured out yet how they want the season to go. There's not really a huge downtime. So my biggest downtime has been in the summer, actually. So I missed one tournament to be over here in Europe. But in June, July, we only had one tournament scheduled. Whereas August onwards, I'll be playing 2 to 3 every month.
I want to thank Ben so much for joining us. If you want to connect with him, we have linked to him on our social media sites. We're Profoundly Pointless on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram. And we've also included his information in the episode description. Okay, now let's bring in John Shull and get to the pointless part of the show. When's the last time somebody gave you a good talking to?
Oof.
Like, set you straight in life.
It's been a while. I don't remember the last time I was given like a good talking to. I do listen to an inspirational speaker, you know, like on YouTube from time to time. That's the last time I remember thinking to myself, like, this guy's talking at me, like he's talking to me.
The last time you got a good talking to, what was it about?
Probably in my early 20s with my father when he was, and this is the last one I really remember. And basically he was just telling me, I mean, I was going out a lot, probably 4 to 5 times a week and just getting hammered drunk every time. And he kind of just pulled me aside as I was going to head out and just was like, listen, you're not being very smart right now. And fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life. And I'll never forget. It wasn't really a talking to, but that one sentence, I've just never forgotten it.
Do you feel like you learned anything?
No, I actually think it's worse. No. Yeah, I mean, looking back on it, I was reckless. I was young, blah, blah, blah. You know, he probably didn't present it to the right way. Probably could have been a little nicer, a little more calmer about it. You know, I still remember it, obviously.
I got one this weekend.
Ooh.
I got a talking to from the wife. She was looking at me and she's like, listen, I'm going to tell you this right now. You're getting fat.
Oh, my God. You guys are so brutal, man. You're so brutal over in the
She Vincent. Came straight at, well, the thing is that the night before I had had a, like, look, we were engaging in edibles and alcohol. And I was like, I think we need to give each other more talking to's, right? Like, we got to hold each other accountable about stuff that we want to do because we made these lists about stuff that we want to do. And, like, you got to hold me accountable. And then the next day, she's like, you're getting fat.
So is this one of those moments where the night before you were just bullshitting and then the next morning she was like, you're getting fat and your eyebrows are stupid and your fingernails are too long?
No, it was just like, you got to be constructive criticism, right? And you got to come at people. And she was like, you're getting fat. Your gut is getting a little bit out of hand. Like, I can see it too much and it's not acceptable. And I was like, okay. Still stings as an adult.
Yeah.
Especially when you need it. You're like, oh,
fuck.
Man, I mean, for a guy who weighs 150, I think your wife should come see somebody that's 300 pounds and say that. But man, I'm sorry. I've never felt bad for you. I kind of feel a little bad for you right now.
Yeah, but I needed it, right? Like, it was good for me. So I'm 180 pounds, but I don't carry weight well. Like, I'm somebody that if I get a little bit out of control, like, ooh, my body magnifies whatever shape that I'm in.
She might have been a little overboard there, man. That can really mess somebody up when you call somebody just outwardly fat or tell them they're kind of
overweight. That's not what she said. That's what I heard, right? Okay. Like, I'm not one of those people, like, it doesn't matter if you massage the language a little bit. I know what you're really saying.
It took me until about 6 months ago to realize that I probably should not have worn medium clothes my entire life. I tried on a shirt that was, you know, a couple sizes too big, and I was like, man, this is actually quite comfortable. So, anyways, it's all
good. You can't go down that road, though, man, because I do that with pants, and the next thing you know, you're rocking, like, 45s and you look ridiculous. Like, you can't go down the comfort road too early in life, because there's no coming back once you start going down that comfort road.
I gotta tell you, I'm in a wedding coming up this weekend, actually, and you know how dress pants are always, you know, 4 to 6 inches bigger usually.
No, I don't actually.
Well, because they do the actual waist, right? They do it like above your belly fat, like kind of just south of your belly button. And when I saw,
wait a minute, are you hitching them up or are you pushing them down? Like, which direction are you already going? And are you going to be an old man? Because there's either going up where people have their pants too high, or they're starting to push them down a little bit where, like, look, I know that your belt buckle is just about half an inch above where your private parts are. You're not fooling anybody with that.
Well,
what are you doing?
I mean, I usually wear my jeans on my waist, right? But for dress pants, for some reason, they always measure me, probably where they measure every man, on your actual waist, which is just south of your belly button there. But every time I see it, it just reminds me that I am not a small man.
Okay, are you ready for shout outs?
Shout outs. Going on, what is it? 36.
I've lost track. Everybody's just waiting for it to stop.
I don't think so. No one's really complaining, at least not to me. All right, Cameron Bars, appreciate you. Ronald Miranda, Austin Rogers, Mildred Torre, Phil Miner, Bilal Arabachi, Sean Kelly, and Sean Masterson. Two Sean's back to back there. Lucas Vega and Clint Wimsetti, come on down.
Are the Sean's spelled the same way, or are they spelled differently?
They are. They're both spelled S-E-A-N, which is what caught my eye.
I always think of Sean, S-H-A-W-N, is the main spelling of Sean that I think of.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then S-H-A-U-N is also a subset.
Oh, I don't know. If I was going to rank my Sean spellings, I would go S-H-A-W-N-S-E-A-N and then S-H-A-U-N.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that top three.
Okay. All right. It's your time to shine. How excited are you? How much? You've been thinking about it for a month. I guarantee you've been thinking about it for a month.
I got to tell you, it's so weird because now when I like order candles, I think about ordering them, obviously, but with the thought of bringing them up possibly on this podcast. So this one's okay. This one's pretty basic.
Can we introduce it, or are you just going to, for people who don't know what's going on? Like,
oh,
we got to get theme music or something.
Sorry, I just get so excited, man. This is...
All right, it's time for Candle of the Month with the outlaw candle connoisseur himself. What's your Candle of the Month?
Although you can't even intro it and keep a...
Can't believe it's a serious thing.
I can't either, but it's kind of taken off. All right. So this,
surprisingly, yeah.
So this one, there's a sale going on right now. Head over to Bath and Body Works. I purchased two of these because I'm just a fan. Smelt this at a friend's house, believe it or not. But it is passion fruit and banana flower. It's a 3-wick candle. Like I said, it's on sale. I don't know if it's going to be on sale throughout the week, but you can get it right now, half off. Bath and Body Works. They have a lot of other great scents too, but I'll just stop at that one. But there's tons of great scents out there.
So if you smelled it at a friend's house, did you then ask them what kind of candle that is?
Oh God, yeah. I was like the awkward hoverer too. I'm like, this is, you know, not like no one's around me, you know. Finally someone comes over and they're like, oh, what you doing in a separate room just smelling the candle? I'm like, I love candles. Tell me about this candle. So
wait a minute, you just went into the room all by yourself in somebody's house smelling candles?
Well, we know them. It's not like it's not like I was invited over.
Wait a minute. Who's the main friend? Who's the first friend? Are you the friend with the guy, or is your wife more the friend with the girl?
My wife is friends with the girl. However, like, we know the family. It's not like she's friends with the girl or the woman, and I'm just there, you know, like it's like I'm just there kind of randomly.
Does this person have a man, a significant other in their life?
Yes, but he was not home at the time.
So you're in another. So you're the only guy there at the party. You're going through. Why isn't it weird?
It's not
you're
weird.
Going through another woman's house who your wife is friends with. You're smelling things in the room.
First off,
she probably thinks you're looking at her underwear,
no,
dude.
No, man, we had just kids just come in from the outside. We walked in the house. I got the scent. I got a smell. I'm like, oh, let me, you know, maybe the candle's right around the corner. So I walked down the hallway, kind of into a family room area. There's the candle. It wasn't like,
so wait a minute.
It wasn't like I was sniffing the underwear drawer.
But how many rooms away are you from the rest of the group? Are you in the room directly adjacent to the rest of the group? Or are you two rooms past where everybody is?
Oh, man. I mean, they were in the kitchen, which is like at the other end of the hallway. So technically, I was like five rooms away.
Yeah, you're snooping in the house, no, man, just looking for scents.
They went to take the kids to get a snack. I told them I was going to take our kids' stuff to the living room. And as I was walking in the living room, I was following the scent. And that's how it happened.
Did you go past the living room to get to the room?
No, the candle was in the living room.
Hmm. Okay.
Anyways, getting back to the candle of the month, it's once again passion fruit and banana flower. It's a three-wick candle from Bath and Body Works. Check it out; you won't be disappointed. All right, let's see here. I got a couple of
bangers for you.
What's more overrated, water slides or roller coasters?
Oh, roller coasters, probably, I think. At least now in my life, where I've hit an age where, like, somebody explained this to me one time, like, something in your body, in your inner ear starts to change, and, like, you have a hard time with roller coasters and, like, getting dizzy much easier as you get older. And now I can't even think of a roller coaster. Like, I start to be like,
I haven't been on a roller coaster. It's going to be 10 years next year. That's the last time I was on a roller coaster. It's been a while. No,
that's probably been about the same for me. But I would say roller coasters are generally – no, a water slide actually is the more overrated, because if you've been on one water slide, you've basically been on all water slides.
Yeah, water slides are very overrated, and they're just not – you know, you wait in a line on a hot summer day. You finally get up there, you get on it, and it's over. And it's not even that. Half the time, you have to do most of the work, right? I mean, it's not a lot of fun.
No, it's very hard to get a good water slide. Like, oh, yeah, that's a water slide. I've been on one before.
Let's see here. Would you rather know the exact date and time when you're going to die, or just live life and when it happens, it happens?
Oh, just when it happens, it happens. Right, because I think that even if you know the exact date and time that you're going to die, that doesn't necessarily mean it's the exact date and time that you're going to be critically injured or have your life changed forever. So, like, all right, okay, cool. I'm not going to die until Tuesday at 9 o'clock. Well, that doesn't mean you're not going to be critically injured Monday morning.
That's you know what? I was not thinking about the whole, you know.
Right.
That whole aspect.
That's like one of those things that, like, you wish – like on a monkey palm or a genie or whatever they call it, and it's like a bad wish. And they're like, well, I told you you'd never die, but you're going to be a vegetable until for all of eternity.
Let's see here. Once again, the world's pretty depressing, but when this episode comes out, it will obviously 4th of July here in America will have passed. So I wanted to know, did you end up buying any fireworks? Did you do anything fun for the holiday?
I did. I bought the little popper fireworks that you can get like just about any single place that you just throw down in the middle of the room, right? Right? They're like $2, you can't hurt anybody, and I decided I was going to bust those out during bath time, which was a mistake.
Oh, man. Talking about scaring the proverbial crap out of somebody.
Yeah, apparently if you throw 10 of them into a room while two children ages 5 and 3 are bathing and not expecting it, it's a slightly traumatizing experience in a small space. So maybe that was a poor decision-making.
Yeah, that's a decision. Yeah, that's not a good thing, but I'm proud of I kind of want to give you a high five for that because that's a good dad move right there.
Like solid dadding but bad parenting.
Yeah. I could give you a talking to, but I'm not going to because I accidentally sprayed my kid in the face with the hose on it was, you know, the hose nozzle was on Jet the other day and she walked right into it. So I can't really say anything.
I peed on my son's head once.
I think I've heard rumblings of the story, but if you want to tell, the floor is yours.
We were outside riding bikes and I went into like the back of an area to pee outside, like all guys go and pee outside. And he rode his bike up to me, crashed his bike and fell directly into the stream. Like before I could stop, like I look, hey, and then he just crashed right into it.
So did you keep going or did you stop immediately?
Well, I stopped immediately. No. I mean, he's my son. Like I'm not going to just pee on a little dude's head, but. Well, I did laugh, and he, you know. I
peed on my wife's face once, but, you know, that is what it is.
Let's just have no explanation and move into our top five.
Let's do it.
Okay, so our top five is top five hardest foods to eat. What's your number five?
Spaghetti.
Are you serious?
Yeah, really. I mean, really, it could be any like pot, like pasta loaded with sauce type of thing. But yeah, it's very delicate, very difficult to eat, especially spaghetti specifically because, you know, how do you roll it up? How do you get it on the fork, et cetera, et cetera. It's too much thinking to eat.
My number five is also spaghetti, but not because it's necessarily hard to eat, but it's hard to eat without making a mess on yourself.
Okay.
That's really what's difficult. Like, my list is based on things that you can eat in public and not look like you're some kind of bear going through a trash can.
Well, that's where you, my friend, are mistaken because I look like a bear. And every time I'm in public, people think I'm just eating out of a trash can.
What's your number four?
Ice cream cones. They're just a pain in the ass. And no matter how delicate you are eating the cone, you're always going to bite it in the wrong place, and then you're going to have a couple of, leaks, or the ice cream is going to start melting. It's just difficult, man. It's not fun half the time.
When I see a man eating ice cream out of a cup, I see a man who has given up on life. Like, I don't care. You as a man need to struggle through the cone. I don't care how big it is, what the problem is. You as a man have to struggle through the act. Yeah. My number four is a mango.
Oh, okay.
Just a pain in the ass.
You know, I was going to put on a pomegranate, but I put that in my honorable mention. Mango's a close second to me, but yeah, they're both pain in the ass things to eat.
And difficult to eat. All right, what's your number three?
Oysters.
Okay.
Once again, okay. It's a lot of work for very little reward, but yet if I have the opportunity, I'm going to eat some oysters, so.
Let's get to this later because I have that a little bit higher in my list. My number three is wings.
Okay.
It's a pain in the ass. And you can see a lot of people who don't eat wings well. You look at most wings and there's a good amount of meat that's left there on that plate.
Kind of how we started the podcast, things, you know, talking to's. I got a talking to when I was in college by a guy about how to properly eat chicken wings. And I've never forgotten it, and I still do it to this day.
What's the proper way?
You have to crack. I don't know what each bone's called, so I'm probably going to confuse people. But you have to crack it at the top, and then you basically break it off into two bones, and then you can just suck the meat off each bone.
I usually struggle with like the top part of the chicken wing, right? Where there's usually like too much stuff on the drumstick. I'm like, I could have done a better job there. But if it's the actual wing, I can clean that up pretty well. Okay, is it your number two or my number two?
My number two. And it's the only time I've ever been eating where I've thrown an entire plate of food into a harbor. And it's because of crab legs.
Mmm. You threw it away?
I was so frustrated because the party that I was with, the people that I was with, everyone kind of started making fun of me because, and I'm not even sure I can properly describe it to you how to crack crab legs over the podcast, but I can tell you that from being ridiculed and just pure embarrassment, and we were right next, it was in Boston naturally, we were right next to the water, I dumped the whole thing into the water and just walked away. I was so upset and embarrassed, and it should be my number one, but I don't eat crab very often or crab legs, so that's why it's number two.
Well, you handled that well, right?
I did not.
How much did you pay for it? I feel like I wouldn't do that only because I paid a lot of money.
Oh, it was
like $30.
Yeah, it was probably $20-$30. I mean, it was a decent amount, and there was fries and everything with it, and I kept the beer. I walked away with the beer, but I dumped the food.
Why'd you get rid of the fries?
I was in a different kind of state. I'm sure the fish ate well. I'm sure they ate very well that night there in the harbor.
My number two is corn on the cob / popcorn. Because it's not necessarily hard to eat, but you get some of that stuff stuck in your teeth. Even flossing sometimes won't get it out. You get popcorn in the wrong spot in your teeth, and you almost feel like you got to go to the dentist to get that out.
I mean, I can't argue with that. I've had moments eating popcorn where the kernel gets stuck in the back, and like the more times you bite down or put pressure on it, you can just feel it getting jammed deeper and deeper into the tooth. That's a good thought, actually.
Yeah.
Number two.
I've had some ones with popcorn where I've like flossed and still is in there, and you've got to get like the little pick thing that they give you and you only keep for like a week after you go to the dentist to get it out.
For sure.
Yeah. Corn, it's deadly. What's your number one?
So I'm going to preface this. I wanted to put sushi, but then I realized that sushi is a me problem because I'm not very good with chopsticks.
Well, you can just use your hands.
Sure, if you could also go the Neanderthal route as well. So my number one,
you're gonna tell me that if you're eating sushi at your house, you're using your chopsticks. You're not picking it up with your hands.
I'm not. No, I'm using the chopsticks, or I resort to a fork.
By yourself eating sushi in your house, you're just not gonna pick it up with your fingers?
No.
Why?
I don't know, because a lot of times there's sauce on the top, or there's, you know, it's, I don't know. I guess I don't really have a reason. I try to fit in with the culture. I try to use chopsticks, and I'm unsuccessful most times.
Okay. All right. No, I get that. Sometimes you can't let it win.
So my number one are hard shell tacos.
Interesting.
Once again, it's kind of like the ice cream cone thing to me is, you know, no matter how you bite into a hard shell taco, you're going to fuck it up because either the taco is going to break entirely or the fillings are going to fall out. It's just, it's so frustrating and difficult to eat.
I guess I don't really have very many hard shell tacos. I'm more of a soft shell taco guy. So maybe that's why I haven't had much difficulty. My number one is seafood. And I'm including in that basically all seafood, like you talked about, like crab legs, lobster, mussels, oysters, all of that stuff that is basically way more of a hassle to eat than it actually is enjoyable. Like the work to reward effort, the return on investment is just not there for me for any kind of seafood like that. It's not worth it.
It isn't worth it. But it kind of is. But you got to be in the right mood, or I'm dumping you in the harbor. Just it's the way it is.
Even shrimp, like it's just too much effort all the time. Like now I got all this stuff I got to deal with. Pain in the ass. What's on your honorable mention?
Let's see. Well, I mean, I talked about sushi. What else here? I think that's pretty much it for me. Chicken wings also, but yeah, I don't know. I guess, well, and some of the fruits, I guess the pomegranates, the mangoes, but not a whole lot.
The only one that I could think of that we didn't really talk about, well, actually two, nachos can be problematic, especially if you're in a group and you don't exactly know who should be eating how much. And peanut butter. Peanut butter can get you in a little bit of trouble.
I don't understand.
You don't have water.
Well, I mean, you could
get stuck in your throat a little bit. Peanut butter can be difficult.
Uh-huh. I don't really get the peanut butter. The nachos, even if you're not with a party, they can get to be a little difficult just because of, you know, they get messy, or if you're drunk, or you have a Super Bowl party and make a bunch of uncooked pizzas and then serve them to people, can turn out to be kind of nasty.
Okay, that's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, subscribe, leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. It really does help us out. And we're going to be, I don't know how it's going to work exactly, but we're going to debut this voicemail system this month. And I can't wait. I can't wait to start hearing from people. Because, listen, we appreciate the comments. We love interacting with you guys on social media. But I think making it much, much more a part of the show is something that I think will be really cool. I'm looking forward to. So hope you join us. And let us know what you think are some of the hardest foods to eat.